Welcome to Not That Girl Anymore, part of the Liminal Network. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon. This is more than a podcast. It's a sisterhood. We're reclaiming our voices, our worth, and our lives, one story, one truth, one brave step at a time. Hey, friends. Welcome back to Not That Girl Anymore. I'm your host, Dawn Bouillon, trauma therapist and coach. And I am here today with Dottie and Ashley, and we are going to be having a conversation about dysfunctional family systems. When we grow up in a dysfunctional family system, we often don't realize that what we have called love was actually survival. We learned what was safe to say and what was off limits, or who we needed to be to keep the peace. Sometimes we learned that silence could keep us safe, or caretaking could keep us loved, or that shrinking ourselves could keep the world around us calm. And because that was all that we knew, it felt normal until one day it doesn't anymore. So today we're diving into what this might look like. And we're not pointing fingers, but we're bringing understanding and compassion to the patterns that shaped us. Because when we can name them, we can begin to change them. So just to get us started, I'm just going to throw a question out to you. When you hear dysfunctional family system, what does that mean to you personally? Dottie, you want to answer that one?
Sure. So my interpretation of a dysfunctional family system really has changed throughout the course of my healing. Mm. I used to think it was just one of those buzz phrases that described a family where not everyone's needs were met, and that not everyone in the family system was being seen. They weren't being heard. They weren't being validated. Things didn't seem fair. You know, so in that sense, every family had some level of dysfunction. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I now know that it's much more than that. Mm. Because a dysfunctional family is one where expressed differences cause conflict. And then parents begin to use abuse and control tactics to keep the family in line.
Wow.
And that's where everyone has to fit into this family unit, the box. You know, we have to live within these walls, and that confines all of us. I now understand just how real and long-lasting, even the small things that we experience that aren't spoken about and taken care of can adversely impact how we show up in the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, definitely. And I think for me, a lot of what Dottie said resonated with me as well, because I think for me, when I think of a dysfunctional family, I think of a highly controlling environment where you don't have autonomy, right? You don't have the right to think your own way or kind of figure out who you are as a person. And you're kind of put into these roles or these boxes to kind of keep the family system in check, because people can't have autonomy in dysfunctional families, kind of break the wheel, you know? And yeah. So, yeah, I think of, you know, no boundaries, you know, where a family where you have no boundaries and boundaries aren't respected as well. That's, you know, a big sign of dysfunctional family system. And enmeshment, which goes back to the autonomy part, where you kind of, everybody has the same mindset, everybody has the same belief system. You know, nobody's allowed to step outside of that. And, you know, there's a level of that as a kid, you know, your values are kind of given to you. But as you grow up and you get older, you're supposed to kind of give your kids the freedom to figure that out for themselves. And when you don't have that in a family system, that can be a major red flag when everybody's having to be, Maybe it's extremely conservative, or somebody's having to be extremely, whatever, like, and you're not allowed to speak about your beliefs or speak about your differences or things you're learning. A lack of openness, I think, overall would be a sign of a dysfunctional family system.
Yeah. Sometimes when a family revolves around one person, if there's a controlling person or someone that has an addiction, then the family just functions around that. You find your role in keeping peace in the family, or your role in trying to make things not blow up. Growing up in a home where my dad struggled with alcohol, that was a very unpredictable environment. Because sometimes that could mean a lot of anger and a lot of watching out for what he's going to be like when he comes home. And then sometimes it was a lot more disconnected, you know? And so what I found is we all fit around that. We all kind of assumed different roles around that. But in doing that, we lose ourselves, right? So sometimes in a dysfunctional family system, we learn there's like rules, right? Like don't talk, don't feel, don't need anything, right? And so you're learning in order to stay safe, I need to follow these rules. I need to keep the peace. So when you think about maybe some of those rules for you guys, what kind of rules showed up for you that maybe we didn't even realize that they were there, but looking back, we can see what those were.
Yeah, I think some of the rules for me would have been we don't feel. Like we can joke about our trauma, we can joke about our pain, but we can't actually be like brokenhearted about it or really feel the pain of the things that we had been through. And it was a lot of minimization, like we minimized it and then they normalized it and they, there's still people that I think they really think that a lot of the things that went on in our family were just normal. It's just absolutely not. And the more I learn, the more I'm educated on dysfunctional family systems and dysfunctional behaviors, I'm realizing how much it impacted us in that way. I think some people cope that way, right? It's a coping mechanism and they can't face the fact of how bad things were. So they tell themselves that it wasn't that bad and that it happens to everybody. And that was kind of like an overlying message. And it's like, oh, we don't tell people about it. We don't talk about it. We're not honest about it. We're going to pretend like it wasn't that bad. We're going to try to normalize it and be like, oh, everybody goes through this. And it's like, no, they don't.
Yeah, because if they can convince you of that, then you won't think it's not normal and you won't tell people. And then, they're able to keep doing whatever it is that they're doing.
Absolutely. And I've learned that it's usually the most dysfunctional person in the family that's setting the temperature. They're the ones that are calling the shots, they're the ones that are keeping people on the rolls and twisting the story and the narrative, trying to manipulate things to make it go in their favor because they have a lot to hide and a lot of insecurity underneath that. For me, it's just hiding the truth and towing the eggshells around the truth and around the people who are the most dysfunctional. It's like you feel like you have to walk on eggshells.
Well, and I just thought when you were saying that, it's like keeping the family secrets. And it's like you feel that responsibility, especially if it's about keeping peace or if it's about, or if everyone else kind of does the same thing and doesn't talk about it, then we feel that responsibility to keep the secrets. Everybody else does,
Yeah, so I resonate with so much of what you said, Ashley, especially where the unspoken rule is really you're not allowed to feel. I've done a lot of work through therapy on learning how to feel my emotions. And still to this day, I still have trouble doing that because as a child, it was so ingrained in me not to have any highs or lows. So any real excitement, oh, you got to temper that down. Don't get too excited. And if you were sad or any of the negative emotions, well, it was like, stop crying. I'll give you something to cry for. It was always not that bad. You're making things bigger than they are. Do as I say, not as I do, and don't ask questions. That was really an unspoken rule, was not to ask questions. I learned early that, my response, if I asked questions or if I showed any emotion, would be negative. The response to that would be negative. So I just stopped asking questions. I stopped being curious. I stopped crying. And I really stopped feeling. So that's why it's so hard, even, after learning to sit with my emotions and partner with them, which I think is very important, it's still hard for me at times. Because I think in some ways it triggers, what happened as a child, and I got all these unfavorable reactions. So when I have emotions, I feel like I need to stay small and stay invisible, and keep my head down. And I think that was some of the really unspoken rules in the family. The spoken rule was be perfect, make the family look perfect. It was keeping the secret that the family wasn't perfect.
And I think what was kind of true for all of us is we didn't realize that our families were dysfunctional until we were adults, right? Until we're in therapy and asking some of these questions and starting to put our stories together and understand that. Why do you think it is that so many of us didn't realize that?
I think for me, when I would talk or ask questions, I couldn't be curious or kind of show up authentically in a lot of ways. And I think for me, having to continue to just kind of stuff everything down, because anytime I would try to be honest or bring things up, it was kind of met with that resistance or that shame or guilt, or it was flipped back on me, or it was like, what is wrong with you? Why are you doing this?
This, no, it's we don't realize that our families are dysfunctional often until we're.
I didn't realize until I was an adult that my family was dysfunctional because I felt like I had to keep stuffing it down and not asking questions, not being curious. And then I think stepping out of it and becoming an adult and, becoming my own person and then going into therapy and talking about those things and realizing as I talked to someone who was a licensed, educated person on dysfunctional behavior, they would be like, that's interesting. The questions they would ask, and it would just kind of make me realize, I'd be like, wow, okay, that wasn't normal. Not everybody else went through that. And I remember telling stories too, because my family, they do tell a lot of stories. And, they'll laugh about them and joke about them and all those things. And I remember telling those stories, and I continue that behavior with other people. And I'd tell them these stories, and they'd just be like shocked. Like mouth drop, like, oh my gosh. And I just didn't realize until I started really, I guess, talking with people and being with people who weren't inside of that small circle of thinking that that was normal, that I started to realize that this really isn't normal. And it's not okay, and it's not healthy.
It was up.
I think it was because it was normalized for us. That's why we don't realize until later on in life that it was dysfunctional because it was normalized, and it wasn't until I reached a point where I could no longer bury the wounds. I could no longer stuff my emotions down because the pain that I was in grew stronger than the fear of admitting it. Therapy helped me to unravel all of that. And it gave me the language and the words and the permission really to admit it. But even now as an adult, I struggle with thinking that my family was dysfunctional. Because I love my parents and I love my siblings deeply. And I believe everybody was doing the best they could at the time. But it doesn't make it right. Even though they were doing the best they could at the time, it doesn't make it right. So while acknowledging that the dysfunction was present kind of makes me feel uncomfortable, I also realize that naming the truth isn't about blame, but it's about healing. And
Absolutely.
that's what I'm doing, healing.
And it's the both and, learning to hold two things at once, that they did the best they could, with what they had at the time, and it was very dysfunctional and it was not okay and it really hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do all make sense in our story, as we're saying, and this is kind of part of understanding ourselves in the context of our story. And, we can have a com that compassion piece, like you said, they probably make sense in their story. And abuse is not okay, and neglect is not okay. Tearing down your children or doing anything to harm purposefully is not okay. So yeah, we can definitely hold both of those things. And that's a really good point, Dottie. We typically take on roles in a family system. And these are some of the most common ones. Number one is the hero child or the golden child. This could be the achiever or the fixer or the one who makes the family look good. They carry the weight of perfection to distract from the family's pain. So that's one role we can take on. And sometimes this can be the oldest child or the one that just is really good at performing. A second role is the scapegoat. This is the truth teller, right? The one also known as the rebel, the one who acts out or gets blamed. They often hold the family's unspoken tension and become the target of its dysfunction. I kind of think of this person as the person that doesn't do bullshit, Some kids can't do bullshit. They innately can't do it. So they're like, what are you doing? That's not okay. You can't talk to me like that. It's the one that's going to push back and call you out on what you're doing. And it's also the one that's not as easily manipulated and so can be blamed oftentimes and made out to be the problem in the family. So that's why we call it the scapegoat. Another role is the lost child, the quiet one that kind of fades into the background to avoid conflict. They survive by becoming invisible. And then we got the mascot, right? The clown, the one that kind of makes everybody laugh. They got like the charm. They just kind of lighten up the room with something silly. And so they hide the pain by using like laughter. And then we got the caretaker, the rescuer, the emotional glue. They take on responsibility for everyone's feelings or become the peacekeeper, right? They want to keep the peace at all cost. So each role is a strategy to create some sense of safety or belonging and or control. Even though those strategies help us survive, they can keep us stuck when we carry them into adulthood, because that's typically what we do. So we start over-functioning in relationships, or we attract people who enforce the same dynamics that we're used to. And we confuse the chaos with love and the silence with safety. But that awareness is the beginning of healing. So those are some of the typical roles that we can kind of shift into. And I think for me, I became more like the caretaker, right? I wanted to make sure everybody's emotions were okay. I wanted to just be a good girl, do the right thing, not be a problem, not upset anybody, doing whatever keeps everybody happy. So what did that kind of look like for you guys? What did love look like in your family growing up, and what kind of role did you take on?
Well, love for me and my family, I felt like it needed to be earned. I needed to make good grades and I needed to obey and follow the rules, even when they didn't make sense. So it was just about nodding in agreement, especially with my mom. She was diagnosed as manic depressive, which now I think would be called bipolar. And she had a lot of narcissistic tendencies. She had the need to control. And, so love for us was just maintaining this ideal that we were the perfect family. So I took on the role as the lost child. That's the one I definitely resonate with the most, the invisible one, because I learned that my best chances at staying safe was just to stay small and to blend into the background. And to need less and to just disappear when things got really tense. I would just quietly slip into the shadows, go in my room, nobody see me, and I learned that the safest place was just being out of the way. So as I grew up, I rarely asked for help. I didn't ask for attention. I didn't ask for comfort because I didn't think those things were available to me. And I tried not to cause trouble because I didn't want the consequence or punishment that came with that. So as a kid who didn't ask for help or for anything and who didn't cause any trouble, then nobody really saw me. And I think on the outside, that might have looked like I was independent or I was kind of a mature kid, but on the inside, I just felt lonely and invisible. I wanted somebody to just see me and ask me, hey, are you okay? Silence doesn't mean you're okay. So that's what I really wanted, was somebody just to kind of see me. And that invisibility followed me into adulthood. Because in all my relationships, I just learned to fade and learn to prioritize others' needs over my own. And I did everything I could to keep the peace, even at the cost of losing myself. But, the interesting thing is that I can't really blame anybody for not seeing because I had become such a master of invisibility. I became a master of disappearing. I became a master at becoming a chameleon and figuring out the temperature of the room and what the majority of the people or the most popular people in that room, I would kind of test out what side they were on, and then I would just side with that. And that way I felt safe, I felt accepted, and I wasn't worried about being abandoned and rejected. But I had to lose myself. I sacrificed myself in order to just kind of follow the.
Yeah, and I know for me, I resonate a lot with Dottie's story too, and her roles, because I was definitely a mix between the lost child and then the peacemaker. I think I had a little bit of that too, because I was always kind of tending to people's emotions and kind of like Dottie said, the chameleon of kind of figuring out what that room needed and then feeling that becoming whatever they needed, shape shifting. Then I also went through different times of my life because I think in my teenage years, I went through a scapegoat phase where I was a scapegoat and I was more so treated as if I was a problem and that I was just a problem child. When I look back and I really think about it, I'm like, I really wasn't. And it's interesting because I was always a truth teller and I've always been one that's been able to see through bullshit. That was a huge threat to my family system, being able to see things for what they were. And I always have been able to do that. And so I definitely resonate with that a lot. Both of my parents were dysfunctional in their own ways. My dad was more so of an overt, like you could clearly see that he was dysfunctional. And my mother was more of a covert. Hers was more hidden and well packaged. I think for me, I always kind of saw that and I always kind of knew it. And I think it always threatened the perfect image that my family was trying to represent. So I got a lot of, they call them the flying monkeys. And it's kind of like where the parents will turn the kids against each other to get control. And so there was a lot of that where it was like sibling on sibling bully, you know, basically bullying to keep the child back in line and to get them back. There was a lot of that in my family too, of just turning us against each other so that they could continue to maintain control, maintain the image, maintain the dynamic so that the truth wouldn't come out and that they wouldn't have to basically take accountability or change.
Absolutely. And that makes so much sense in your story. And we're looking at these things really to just deepen our understanding and to see, oh, that's what we did to survive, right? Like, since that's what we did to survive, then a lot of times we just brought that with us into our adulthood until we're able to look at it and get some understanding around it and healing around it. Then we're still going to have a tendency to do these things. And that's kind of what I'm hearing you guys saying, how we've brought this into our adulthood. You can probably name the different people in your family that played which role, you know, or like the mascot or the hero child that's just like perfect and does everything right and gets straight A's and, you know. But when we kind of look at that with grace and understanding, you're seeing, oh, so that's how they learned to survive. That's how they learned to stay safe in that family system. Dottie, you kind of mentioned this earlier. We kind of talked about walking on eggshells, or maybe it was you, Ashley, that mentioned that too. What we learn when we grow up in those family systems, our body holds on to, right? We kind of have that constant scanning for danger or bracing or walking on eggshells. Even when our adult lives are more stable, our nervous system can still be wired for that chaos. Dottie, you probably have some things to say about this as a somatic practitioner with the body. What kind of happens in our body when we grow up in that unsafe and unpredictable environment?
Yes, so, going through the somatic practitioner course, I learned a lot about how emotion and trauma is stored in the body. We now know that that's a science-based fact, that this is all stored in the body. And you were talking about the nervous system. So part of our nervous system is a parasympathetic nervous system, and that gets turned on whenever we're relaxed and we're at rest. That's when we have clarity, we sleep better. But most of us go through life with our sympathetic nervous system switched on, and we don't even realize it. And when we're in that state, that's the state of being in the fight, flight, or freeze mode. So imagine just living life stuck in that mode. And, we're always hypervigilant. We're always waiting for the next thing to happen or the shoe to fall. And all of that, all of the anxiousness and all of those emotions that come with all of that get stored in the body. And that's where we get anxious, we get depression, we get all kinds of diseases. We walk around with our shoulders tense and our jaws clenched. So, our bodies start to ache and hurt, and a lot of the issues and ailments that we have are really caused because we haven't released what is stored in the body. We'll go to the doctor and we'll get medicine and it will help the symptom. But until we look deep into what the root cause is, the symptom will keep coming up over and over and over. So really we're just putting a band-aid on a wound that really needs a lot of attention.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's a really good explanation.
Yeah, and then when we reconnect with our body, that's when our breath deepens and our muscles can relax. And that's done really through somatic work, which is breath work, it's meditation, it's light exercises. Those are the things that help us get rid of all of this tension, and you'll feel the shift. And the shift will be from survival to safety. And then your parasympathetic nervous system is activated, and that's where we can finally rest and thrive. So when we're in this place, we can move beyond just merely managing our life and begin to fully live it.
Yeah. You have helped me so much with this, Dottie, because I carry so much tension in my body and I don't even realize it. But when you walk me through some of these deep breathing things and I'm getting reconnected with my body, I don't even realize how tight I am or how much I'm not breathing, how much my breath is so shallow, or I feel like I forget to breathe. We're just kind of making those connections of like where this all started. In the family systems that we grew up in, what we had to do to survive wasn't just take on a role. It had an impact on our body. It had an impact on how we breathe. It had an impact on how we function and our health and our, not just our mental health, but our physical health as well. And you've helped me understand that so much more and helped me get some relief.
That trauma gets stored in our tissues. And unless we can find a way to release that trauma through somatic work, we do live in that constant state of hypervigilance.
Yeah. So, actually, I have a question for you. And I mean, maybe you and I both can kind of relate to this, but how do you feel like faith and how faith can play into the dysfunction in a family?
Yeah, that definitely resonates with me. I think, for my family, there was aspects of faith that were twisted to condone the abuse. And then there's the aspect of just trying to keep up this image, where we were this big, perfect family, and there were so many people in the church that looked up to our family and that really told us, like, hey, I want my family to be like yours.
Oh,
And so there was this immense amount of pressure to
wow.
just, to really have this perfect image. And I think there was just a lot of guilt and shame with that too, like of just like, oh, you have to look a certain way and be a certain way and do things a certain way, or else you're not a good Christian. And so
Yeah.
a big part for me too is, as I'm healing from all of that, is redefining what faith looks like for me. And recognizing that all of those things that I was forced to believe and think and kind of perform, because I hate, that's something I've always hated, is feeling like I have to perform. Feeling like I have to be fake and that I can't just be real. And that is so difficult for me. And so that's always something, even growing up, where I just really struggled with that, because I was just like, I just want to be real. I just want to be authentic. I had this longing in me. And I think because I was so shut down and kind of put into a box with that, that was just something that is still today that is so important for me, to just be able to have that realness and that authenticity. And I think one thing too that I'll kind of end off with this, that I feel like with religion, is they kind of stripped us of our autonomy. Our ability to think for ourselves and kind of have different views, or anything. And I feel like that's something I still see in the church, is that people feel like you have to have this one belief and these same sets of values or whatever, and what you think that looks like. But even it says in the Bible that we work out our salvation for ourselves with fear and trembling. And so it's like, you can't knock that. That's in the Bible,
Right. Yeah.
And it's absolutely true, because we can all look at the Bible and see something different, because we all need something different. And we all have different values, and we all have different things that are important to us, that are important to our healing, that we're going to find in the Bible, we're going to find in our faith, that are going to be different from other people. And
Right.
so Yeah, I think just the autonomy part of it was a huge, performance, the autonomy, and just the respect for different views and the openness to, that we don't have it all figured out, that everybody's figuring it out.
Right. And for me, as being like the caretaker was my role, which meant I'm kind of living my life for everyone else. I'm kind of, who do you need me to be? And I'll be that, and kind of losing myself. And so losing myself, abandoning myself became more what love was to me. I thought that's what that was. I saw my mom do that with my dad, like losing her to make sure dad was happy. And I feel like for me, my church experience, what I was learning in religion, just deepened that divide from myself, right? Almost like encouraged me to be the peacekeeper and to be, to be a good girl, to obey and to not cause any problems and to not need anything. So it just kind of deepened that divide for me and almost praised it. Like the more that you're under the bus and there's less of you, the more godly you are, the more, so it just kind of, it was one thing to learn that in a family system. It's another thing to think that that's what God wants you to do too, lose you. And I always kind of think about that because the church I was going to, I went to church without my parents. I went to church with my grandparents, and my parents had very differing views from my church. But I was kind of made to look down on my family and to cling to the church. So there's some ways that the church became my family. It became my family system. It really shaped a lot of who I became because I was starting to disconnect from my biological family. And so it's always those things really kind of go together, and my trauma is really interlocked with the church that I grew up in and some of the teachings that deepened the divide from me and myself. So we're just starting to get honest about this and have compassion for these parts of us, understanding ourselves in the context of our story. And the more we can see that, the more we can see where these things came from, it can help us step into breaking these cycles, right? Stepping out of these roles, being more authentic with who we are and who we want to be, creating the lives that we want to live. So it's like we don't want to get so focused on the problem or the thing that kind of broke us, but how do we heal? What does it look like to take your life back, to take your pin back, and to be the person that you've always wanted to be? So let's kind of talk about that. Like, what does it look like to begin breaking those patterns, breaking out of those roles, and in a way that leads to love? We're not blaming anybody. What does it look like to be the cycle breaker or to break some of those patterns and break out of those roles?
I think for me, yeah, stepping out of that role, of the caretaker or the scapegoat or the invisible child. So, like, showing up, being honest, saying something. When I see something, I'm going to say something, obviously when it's wise to do so. But that is like a part of me breaking that generational trauma and also showing up in my kids' lives in a different way. And I think a big part of, me being able to recognize the ways that my parents didn't show up for me, it's helping me to better show up for my kids. It's helping me to better recognize how I might be repeating some of those patterns. We're not perfect. And I haven't always been the perfect mom. I've been a really good mom, considering everything. I've been an amazing mom. And my kids know that. But thank you, Dottie. She's clapping. But yes, I am really proud of myself for the mother I've become and the family I've built, because my life now does not reflect my childhood at all. And if anything, it's the opposite of my childhood. I get to heal with my kids. I get to give them the things that I never got. And, I get to give them the gift of autonomy and the gift of having different feelings and having different thoughts and having different just ways of expressing themselves and kind of being like, that's you. And I love that. And we're not going to put you in a box now that this is you for the rest of your life because you're going to change and that's okay. And we're going to let you change and figure it out. And kind of just gifting my kids with that beautiful, the things that I never got to have myself. And I think too, another thing is also just setting boundaries, creating the distance or whatever it is that I need from my family to make sure that I'm safe and that I have the safety that I never got to be able to heal. Because if you're constantly being exposed to dysfunctional stuff, it's different when people are dysfunctional and you can have a conversation and you can say, hey, this is not okay with me. They're like, okay, they take accountability or they, reflect, they have self-reflection, they have self-awareness, they take accountability. Like that's a safe place. And that's not something that I've experienced with a lot of my family. And so it's a lot of deflection. It's a lot of, guilt shifting of, oh, you did this and you did that. And there's no accountability. And so it's not a safe place. I've learned that I have to create distance and that that's just what is good for me. And I don't need to have a conversation because sometimes with people like that, you can't have a conversation. And also, a part of that is I don't want my kids growing up thinking that's normal either.
Right.
With a group of people that think that a certain behavior is normal. And
Right.
so that's been a huge part. And it's very difficult. It is hard. It's not easy. And there's a ton of grace for those people, also as well, if they would ever want to heal and change and, start to go on their own healing journeys, I would welcome them with open arms. But yeah, I think just protecting, learning to protect myself now, learning to heal with my kids and knowing that these people that are still in these dysfunctional systems, that they're still doing the best that they can with what they know, and that's okay too.
Let me just say this, though, about the two of you knowing, getting to know you and getting to see how both of you interact with your children. Y'all are both fantastic moms. I applaud both of you for that, and I celebrate that. For me, I didn't figure all this out until later on in life. My daughter is grown and she lives on her own. I realized as I started peeling back the curtain and all of the layers of my life through therapy, I realized that I had done some of the same things to her and had put her in some of the same boxes that I was put in because that's what I was conditioned to do, and that was what I thought I was doing the best thing for her. And when I realized that I had blocked her freedom or tried to control some of the things that she did, just like I had been controlled, and when I realized that that was dysfunction, I was like, oh my, I have to correct this. So what I did was I asked her to have a very honest and candid conversation, which we did. We did get together on the therapy couch, and her and I were able to talk about a lot of things. And I was able to ask her a lot of questions about how she felt growing up. And I was able to apologize to her for not being the mom that I should have been to her. Not that I was a bad mom, because I love her so much and I was doing the best I could, but I now realize that I was trying to fit her into this box that she didn't fit in. And she went off and did her own thing. And she is one of the most caring, most beautiful, most loving person I know. And when I was able to get my head out of the sand, I was able to see that and tell her how proud I was, not just for all of her accomplishments, but for who the person she is today. So I'm not able to get that time back, but we can move forward in the most loving relationship that we can. And that's my goal.
That's incredible, Dottie. And that's just an incredible story. I'm like so proud of you as a mom, that was willing to give that gift to your daughter. And, like you said, we can't go back and change the other things, but we can definitely be different now and see each other now and celebrate that now. I just love that about you, Dottie, your willingness to see that, but also repair that and be different. At your age and stage of life, I just think that's incredible. And I think anyone would love to have a mom that would be willing to do that. I think that's incredible. This whole breaking the cycle and breaking the family patterns thing is so interesting for me. I feel like I have a unique situation. I do feel like I was the first one to actually get trained in some of these things or to see some of these things. I think my mom was the first real therapist in our family. She's the one that has always been the one that people go to because she listens and she cares and she loves deep. What's been really cool is as I have learned about family systems and learned about how we make sense in our families and all of that, my family has chosen to learn too, alongside of me. I am so proud of my family because every single one of us has chosen to grow. My dad is not the same person that he was. He's become like one of my biggest fans. He's so proud of me. Like, he's told me how proud he is of me, and he's taking responsibility for the things that now he recognizes. And he even recognizes where it came from. We had a conversation one day about, how he realized that he was trying to please his dad by being like his dad and what that meant for how you treat women. And so to be able to have that conversation with him and to see all of us to heal and choose to, just become better people now. Like my brother, he's one of my favorite people in the world. And he is just like, he's looking at how can he heal himself and become a better man and a better dad. I have so much respect and love for my family because, yeah, we screwed some shit up, right? We did things wrong. But we're allowing ourselves to make mistakes, but also learn how to repair those things and how to be safer for one another, which makes them safer for my kids. My kids are my fiercest motivators for change. Being women in this world, what I learned about that as a kid versus what I want them to know about that now as young girls and women in this society. I don't want them to do the same thing I did. I don't want them to make the same mistakes I did or not know their worth and value like I didn't. Yeah, it's so worth it, but it's also such a joy when people decide that they want to heal too and they want to stay in your life and they want to better themselves. And I know that that's not something that every family gets to experience. And I'm truly grateful for how my family has chosen that and shown up for me. So I just wanted to say that and honor them as they have walked with me and been very gracious with me and chosen to grow alongside of me.
We celebrate that.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. So let's kind of wrap this up. If you guys grew up in a dysfunctional family system, if you guys heard some of what we said today, and say, I can relate to that. I hope you can see that you just did what you had to do to survive. You adapted in the only ways that you knew how. And now we don't have to stay in those same roles that we learned. We can change that. All of us are examples of that. And, it's just a lot of hope in knowing that we can change. You get to redefine what love and safety and belonging mean for you. You get to be the healing that your family never had. So, as we close, I thought this would be kind of fun. What's one truth that you wish your younger self knew about love and safety?
I wish that my younger self knew that love and safety didn't have to be earned, that it wasn't something to work for or prove yourself worthy of.
Right.
You know, it's something you deserve simply because you exist. And I wish my younger self knew that I didn't have to people please or lose myself to feel loved, you know, and that I'm beautifully and wonderfully made just the way I am, and that I am enough. I wish my younger self knew that all along she was enough. You know, but I'm deeply grateful to have that revelation now.
I love that, Dottie. I think I would say to trust your gut, trust your intuition, and that good people do exist, and that you are worthy of being treated well, and
Right.
you're worthy of being loved. And that I wish that someone would have said, give that love that you give to everybody else back to yourself. And that you deserve to give that same love, that same compassion, that same kindness that you give to everybody else back to you.
Beautiful.
Oh, I love that so much. And I can so relate to that because I think that's what I would say to my little girl too. Like, you don't have to lose you to be loved. Like, we actually like you. We love you. We just wish she knew that sooner. I wish she knew she didn't have to become what someone else wanted her and needed her to be, but she could just be herself. And like you guys, I'm celebrating that we can do that today and we can bring that little girl with us wherever we go and continue giving her what she didn't have back then. Right? So any just kind of wisdom you guys want to offer before we close up today, or just something that you thought about that you didn't get to say before we wrap up?
I mean, really, I just hope that, you know, us sharing all of our stories helps others recognize themselves and these experiences, and that they see that healing is truly possible. That's what I hope.
Yeah, and I also want to say to anyone who's experienced that, who maybe thinks or thought that that was normal, that good relationships exist. Good families exist, and you don't have to continue and do the same thing that your family did, and that you are allowed to step outside of that. And once you do, you'll see that there's this beautiful, big, beautiful world out there that is full of possibilities and full of healing and full of life and joy and all of the things that you've dreamed of.
Yeah, so good. We only get one life. I want you to live it. I want you to heal. I want you to do whatever it takes for you to heal because you deserve that and you're worth that. And it's possible. Just remember, you guys, you matter. Your story matters. Your pain matters. Your dreams matter. And you're not that girl anymore. At Embrace Your Brave, our passion is to create safe, healing communities where women can be seen, known, loved, and begin to heal and thrive. Because healing isn't meant to happen alone. We heal best in community, surrounded by women who remind us who we are. We have two upcoming opportunities for you to join us. Reclaiming Faith meets on Tuesdays. It's a gentle, grounded space for women healing from religious trauma and spiritual abuse, learning to trust their voice and rebuild faith that feels free and authentic. And Reclaiming You meets on Wednesdays. It's a restorative, empowering group of survivors of narcissistic and emotional abuse who are ready to reclaim their truth, their voice, and their life. Both groups continue beyond the sessions with a private online community, a place to stay connected, supported, and growing together. These aren't just groups, they're sacred spaces where shame loses its grip and truth sets you free. Learn more or register and join us at embraceyourbrave.org because your story matters, your healing matters, and you matter.
Hey, friend, just a quick note. I am a licensed therapist, but this podcast isn't therapy. It's not meant to diagnose or treat anything. It's here to offer you support, encouragement, and real conversation. If you're struggling, please reach out to a trusted professional. You are not alone, and you are so worthy of healing.
Even if your voice shakes, keep using it. Your healing matters. If you're ready to go deeper, you can book a session by clicking the link in the show notes or visiting our website, embraceyourbrave.org, to learn more about our therapy and trauma-informed coaching options. Let's explore how we can walk this journey together. You are not alone. Embrace your brave, sis. You're not that girl anymore.